to anybody else in the in my organization. Dwayne doesn't even have it yet. This was finished at 2 o'clock in the morning. My plane left at 7, so it's hot off the press. It's been proofread. I got 400 hours in this 16-page brief. It's got almost 10,000 words in it. Putting that together, doing the research, cross-referencing, and rewrites on it. And there was a lot of rewrites. Because when I do rewrites, I try and find fraud within my own document. I try my own cases, and I look for elaborate noun-verb combinations to create subject matter. There were times when I'd use as many as 40 words to create a single noun-verb, not even knowing it, because you're so conditioned to create this type of technology, and then have to go back in and completely reverse the writing so that you have a preposition, verb, noun. A preposition, verb, noun means that you have a preposition which assigns a subject matter violation. In other words, without due process or without a Fourth Amendment warrant. You're using something that is as is a negative of what should be. The second part here is the verb noun. Thinking is a verb. What the thinking influences is intent. Intent is a noun. Anything in nature that is an intent is a noun. So you're going to do the will of intent, the thinking of the noun. How it's going to be influenced, how it's going to be controlled. And by adjusting your thinking pattern to always put your mind on trial for moving the subject matter, you will know exactly how the negligence of the mind, the criminal activity of the mind, functions to come to an answer. And through this process, you can isolate your writings so that you always create a negative procedure to sue the people who have injured you for what they did not do. There is no subject matter, there is no evidence, there is no exhibits to be produced before the court. Because if you make the statement, the judge violated my rights, well, he's supposed to violate your rights. The judge is a noun, the word violate is the verb. And it comes in sequence because the judge came before the violation, there's no injury. Same thing with the police officer arrested. He's supposed to arrest. And without a Fourth Amendment warrant came after. It's a prepositional phrase, after what the police officer did. But when you turn it around and you say without a Fourth Amendment warrant, the police officer arrested, now you've established a violation and the police officer now loses the shield of immunity. Now he's acting as an armed individual kidnapping you under Title 18, 1201, and restricting your freedoms. That carries a 76-year prison sentence just because you reversed wrote the sentence backwards. And you're going to bring the whole case on negligence because he didn't file the procedures. In order to get the gun, to carry the and have the badge and get the authorization, he had to swear to support the Constitution of the United States. And by vacating that contract, that first contract, then initiates all the penalties that befall him. The very last page of this book is your charts. And these charts are what keep this document organized. Because you list your defendants down the left side and you have violations across the top. The numbers that are incorporated on this chart are the procedure on how things happen. The condition of the mind, the will of intent, those open up. And there's another chart of 3 or 4 pages inside the book on the back cover that is already outlined just to put those couple numbers on there, that took about 4.5 hours to put that scenario together. Because each one of the procedures, each one of the violations has to be weighed on its subject, on its definition, and then placed properly into a formula so one hinges upon the other. Now there are five factors that will always stay the same. They will not change no matter what your subject matter is before the court. The first one is Title 42 U.S.C. 1986 for knowledge of the law. You've got to establish thinking first, because without thinking, you can't have a violation. The person has to be intelligent, or you can't. There's no will of intent. The second rule is Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 26E, which is discovery. It says that if you discover a fraud in the law, that you must immediately notify a judge or an officer of this with the knowledge that you've discovered a violation. This violation then goes back to a Title 42 U.S.C. 1986 for negligence. The negligence is the relevancy that the person was smart enough to understand, he discovered the mistake, and he didn't take action to correct it. Carries a 1-year prison sentence. The fourth thing is Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 9B for fraud. Because if the first three things have taken place, you've established a fraud before the court. Once a fraud, always a fraud. The case is contaminated. And there's no statute of limitations for fraud. The fifth thing is Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 12B7. Now, 12B7 is the word joinder. If you've committed a fraud, you can never join with what's going to happen in this case. Join? Joining means that the court has never had jurisdiction over the case because there was a fraud. The jurisdiction is what's going to be established. If the judge puts gold fringe on the flag, it was a foreign government, which was an 11th Amendment violation and an Article 1, Section 9, Chapter 8 violation. So there's two constitutional violations based on his choice of venue. So there's no way you can possibly join. Now, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 12B, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, are not how you read it. It's not done systematically. Law is practiced backwards. You've got to go 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. I'll go through that. 7 is joinder. If you're not joined with the individual, you cannot state a claim upon which relief can be granted, which is 12b6. 12b6 is their number one favorite disqualification rule. But an attorney cannot bring a failed to state a claim because he didn't bring in a joinder first. He never joined with you. It to qualify for 12b6. So it's a fraud. He doesn't do it because, see what they're doing is they're jumping back and forth. The judge is picking rules and enough rules and regulations out of the codes, out of the Constitution, to make it look like that he is practicing law, so that the public does not become alarmed that gross negligence has been perpetrated upon them. So what they want to do is they want to give you just enough information to get by, but yet still certify the fraud and get you to enter into private contract and volunteer to put yourself in jail so you can get paid by the federal government. Now, you got joinder, 12b7, fails to state a claim, 12b6. 12b5, the process of service. How can you have joinder if they didn't give you proper process of service? That's 12b5. 12b4 is they didn't give you the service. In other words, they didn't give you documentation that was legitimate. They gave you fraudulent documentation. But they didn't give you, because they put your name in uppercase nom de guerre. They killed you on paper, so the service was defective. Then when they went to process the defective service, that was also defective. They can't state a claim when they're defective, so they can't join with you when they're defective. Which then puts us down to a 12b-3, wrong venue. They're either moving in a foreign government, in a military court-martial, under a national flag court-martial. They have attempted to suspend the court, the Constitution, in a de facto government. They've named themselves to be esquires of a foreign power. What you wind up with is totally wrong venue. You are a sovereign citizen and can only be tried in a Title IV USC 1 court under an American flag, Title IV USC 1 flag. Right, now, Army Regulations 840-10, 2-1, you have got superior jurisdiction over the court. So you're taking your flag and you're capturing the courtroom. But it was the willful intent of the court that caused you the deprivation of rights under the venue, which is a criminal act, carries a 10-year prison sentence. Title 18, 242. Yes?
Is it immaterial whether you're defending the flag or not?
No. It makes no difference. Now, your next thing is, now that you've established the wrong venue, is the court does not have subject matter jurisdiction over the person before the court. Now, here I, Freudian slip. I use the word person. That means corporate entity. You don't use the word person, use the word party, because a party is a natural person in litigation, or a human being in litigation, or people in litigation. So now we're going to be addressed. They don't have jurisdiction over the party before the court, because the 76543 has been violated. Now they violated two. That means they can't possibly have subject matter jurisdiction over the subject before the court. They can't, if they don't have subject, the judge hasn't read the case, he hasn't done his paperwork, it's the wrong venue. How can he have subject matter jurisdiction over the subject? He doesn't. He loses all jurisdiction. If he moves forward, he perpetrates a fraud again. The nom de guerre creates the fraud. So you go from a 12B into an 11. Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 11, which says if you file a frivolous action before the court, you can be sanctioned under Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 16F for attorney fees and court costs. And under summary judgment, collect it immediately. So we're going backwards in the numbers. You got 12, now we're going to 11, which goes to 10. 10 is nom de guerre, name of the party, but they always put down the name of the person because they kill you on paper in uppercase.
There's a basic problem here, Dave, and I shouldn't be interrupting, but just, I can't get past this.
Go ahead.
You're talking about using summary, you're asking for summary remedy in a admiralty court because there is no summary at law.
There's no summary in admiralty. The flag that they're using is not an admiralty court. The flag that they're using is not identified by any government in the world. Anytime you take a Title IV USC 1 flag and put a gold fringe around it, or take any national flag, not national flag, any constitutional flag, of any of the 250 nations in the world and put a gold fringe around it, it's not identified by any country. If they were to specifically identify the foreign power, that foreign power would then have right to say, you've used my flag for malice and sue in the world court for desecration of their flag in your court. But by placing the yellow fringe around whatever flag it is you have, there is no country anywhere on this planet that it's represented by. No constitution. Nobody is hurt. So the judge becomes the master of something that never existed and doesn't exist under the law of the flag. So there's nobody to prosecute him. He's still the master under the law of the flag, which is unidentified, and he holds the title of Esquire. And he confesses to this under oath.
How can he pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States and do his oath and then turn around and do this?
Well, you only can arrest him for what happens in that sanctuary when he, under the will of intent, picks up that flag and carries it into the sanctuary. See, when he took his oath, he was a judge. He was elected. He had his title. But the very next thing he does is, he says, well, under the law of the flag, I can suspend my constitution. I can suspend my oath. And under the rules and regulation of perjury, it says if you swear to do something, and then with the will of intent, with the knowledge of your mind, surrender that and cause a deprivation to that oath or allegiance, you commit treason, constructive treason against that oath and affirmation or against that allegiance. You commit perjury of oath. And because he's the one that's responsible as fiduciary, he takes the responsibility for that. And he did it before you came into court. So he did it with the intent under Title 18, 242, to cause you a deprivation. In the same way as an individual conspires to hire an assassin to kill another person, even though that person doesn't die, and the person who was hired to kill him is caught, the person who ordered the killing is guilty of the conspiracy as if it happened and will be held responsible for first-degree murder of that individual. The same thing takes place when the judge grabs the flag, he carries it in. It is his premeditated intent to deprive you of your rights, and he is guilty by association to cause you this deprivation and commit treason against the Constitution. And when you lay on the constructive treason, perjury of oath, deprivation, conspiracy, because the other attorney, the DA comes into court and tells him this, and the chief judge who swore him in knows about it, doesn't stop and correct the wrong, and instructed him to do this, the chief judge, you would have to prove that he is part of the conspiracy. They lose all immunity under this conspiracy to commit the constructive treason. And you're looking at 75 to 100 years in jail.
I had a judge that came in late. I never ever seen her carry the flag in the memoir.
Flag is there. She's the fiduciary. It's her responsibility to remove it from the courtroom and bring in a Title IV USC 1 flag.
It's her responsibility.
Yes, her responsibility and her responsibility only.
Okay.
Now, in Judge Dreyfus's case, or this is Bob Laird's case. When Judge Dreyfus came into the courtroom, he had a gold eagle on a standard with a gold rope on a Title IV USC 1 flag. The standard has jurisdiction over the flag. The braid made it an admiralty court. The eagle committed the fraud necessary because only the President of the United States can use the eagle. So, upon challenging and noticing the judge then ordered the bailiff to unscrew the eagle and remove the braid, and we had a Title IV USC 1 flag on a stick. Not aluminum pole, on a stick. And we held common law trial. So the judge knew exactly what it meant, he knew exactly what it was all about, and he was not going to stand trial for treason. However, because he had knowledge and confessed it under oath, the court reporter wrote it down, and it was witnessed by a dozen citizens and parties. Because he came into the courtroom, it was still his premeditated intent to cause the deprivation ahead of time. Even though he still maintained a common law hearing upon our arguing from outside the bar, which the conversation never took place because of that invisible wall. He was always under admiralty. We were under common law until he unscrewed that eagle and took off the braid. Then the veil was dropped. We were both in common law, and he said, come into the bar, and we came into the bar because now he was speaking to us through the same jurisdiction. We had a conversation that was legally impossible to have for 35 minutes because he couldn't hear us and we couldn't hear him, even though it took place.
Yeah.
Legally, it could not have happened. The court reporter still recorded it. And if it comes down to semantics and you take it before the United States Supreme Court, they will make the ruling that the conversation never took place because a judge cannot rule over two jurisdictions. And because a judge is only an actor, at no times was the judge ever a judge until we broke that veil. At that moment, he became a judge. And at that moment, he became a common law judge also. The two ran simultaneously, so he never stepped over the line. It was unique. And because he followed the letter and walked that tightrope, and he didn't step over and neither of us fell off, there was no grounds to sue this man, and he did an honorable thing by what he did. But at the same time, I could bring a case against him because it was the will of his intent to conspire to do this ahead of time, even though it never happened. Just like the assassin that never hits his mark. The person that ordered the assassin is the conspirator, and the conspiracy is what will prosecute him. And these are very, very powerful, willful to create deprivation. And that comes under, when you study your treason, comes under your overt act.
That's the statement we have here, David. It is the will of intent. Intent coupled with the act of will gives rise to the actual act of treason against the Constitution of the United States, pursuant to Black's Law Dictionary, giving cause to the offense of attempting by overt acts to the government of the United States, to the government of the state to which the offender owes allegiance, and of betraying the state into the hands of a foreign power.
That's the exact definition I have just explained to you in the last half hour. And they have no remedy from this. This is the scariest thing that's ever come across down the pike on these people. And it's really, really got them frightened. This will dismiss everything from traffic citations to bank robbery. I'm sorry to say, bank robbers belong in jail. But I intercepted a communique between Denver, Colorado, and Connecticut, where two judges, through their faxes, were sending a 15-page document back and forth. On the man from Milwaukee has perfected treason and perjury of oath at all costs, uphold the Constitution, and have a common law hearing. And I've got that with me. And it says that they have found out our de facto government.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Who is
it? Huh? Gold fringe flag. Everybody under a gold fringe flag is part of the conspiracy. And with this information now, and it's going out, it's being published, the new treason papers are being sent out and faxed all over the United States, free, because that will save the United States from, and it's, you know, 10,000 words, and it's very carefully, exactly what I've said here, it is outlined in the same scenario in your paperwork, so you've got hard copy on it. Yes?
He continuously mentioned the gold frames and breaks and so forth. I continuously run into birds.
All right. When you take the flag, you present it, the proper display of the flag, if you got it on a wall, is like this. And if you're going to hang it vertical, you display it like this. Now, when you display it in a position so that the field is to the right and down, it suspends the Constitution. It makes it a military... It's not military, martial law. It puts it under martial law. It suspends. It says there's an emergency situation. Yes. You spin it. This means that your full constitutional rights are enforced. And then when you rotate it like this, it means that they're suspended. Yes. Correct. Now, the reason, yes, it's also in Congress because we're still under the War Powers Act of 1933. But if they have a flag in the sanctuary that has got gold fringe on it, then you've got your desecration of the flag. And under the law of the flag, you've got your de facto government. Now, when they put the flag like this, you'll see this in meetings, like you go to a school auditorium, for instance, where you've got 1,000 people sitting, and they'll display the flag like this. It says that this room is under martial law, that your constitutional rights have been suspended, that if you create a disturbance, we will not sit there and give you a Fourth Amendment warrant. We're not going to read you your Miranda rights. We're going to put the disorder down, and we were going to have peace. The same thing is true in airport bus stations and train depots for international and leaving. Every flag of the world, all 250 nations, is displayed like this, hanging from the ceiling. You go into Denver Airport. In the entire Denver Airport, from one end to the other, it's got all the flags listed on a steel cable, hung like this. No gold fringe, full national flags. Because they're saying, any country of the world, this territory of the airport is suspended. And that your constitutions are suspended here, and if you pull any kind of disorderly conduct, you will be put down. We will have order in this airport.
Is that a law pursuant to something that is set?
Under the law of the flag, yes. And you'll find it. You'll find a display of the flag, the jurisdiction, rules, and regulations for the different colors and stuff in a book called Federal Rule Styles Manual, 3.4, 1984 edition. Federal Rule Style Manual. And you're going to have an absolute impossible time to get a hold of it. 3.4, 1984 is the edition. I do not have the author.
Where did you get your copy?
I don't have a copy. One of my students brought it to the seminar, showed it to me, but wouldn't surrender it. So I don't have a copy, and I have not been able to obtain a copy. But that's where you get it from. That's where the information comes from.
Yeah.
It's also listed in Army Regulations 260-10. 260-10 is your field army manual, has one set of rules and regulations on the yellow fringe. The second one is Army Regulations 840-10, which is included in your paperwork, chapter 2-1 and 2-5 and 2-6. Those are your three stats. And 8-2 explains the standard. In other words, the flagpole and the jurisdiction of how the flagpole is used. A gold eagle can be used by the President of the United States only. A gold spear can only be used during a military court-martial. A gold ball is only used for outside advertising for recruiting. It's a recruiting for military or for advertising of military. A gold acorn is used in parades and on your platoon standards.
Diamond, yeah.
The gold rope represents admiralty jurisdiction. Now, we were up in Chilton, Wisconsin. Judge Poppy had a Title IV USC 1 flag like this on a wood stick. I says, I know Poppy. He doesn't do anything that's legitimate. So I went up there to investigate the flagpole. And he had a piece of 6-inch gold sewing string thread stuck through the eye of the flag pole to make it an admiralty flag. And it was a legitimate admiralty flag to suspend the Constitution of the United States.
Why would our senators and President of the United States let courts get away with this thing?
They're part of it. They're all part of it. Because when the Constitution is suspended, any decision they make, they're immune from prosecution under this de facto governments. They're immune from the subject matter, okay? No matter what the subject matter is, they're immune from it. Okay, but this isn't about subject matter. This is about procedure. And everything you learn here is about how to enforce this procedure to get our constitutional rights and guarantee our constitutional rights and enforce them. Everybody makes the statement, well, you can't sue a judge. Who's going to prosecute it? What judge is going to hear another judge's case? Then they come back and they say, well, most judges are Masons, and a Mason can't sue another Mason, except for murder and treason. We've perfected treason. I've given you all the outlines, all the technology to properly get to the treason through knowledge. For 100 years, 1905, when 1983 injury was written, man has always walked in and said, the judge violated my rights and caused me a 1983 injury. I'm going, no, he didn't. You can't charge a man with causing you a personal injury. You can't jump to an injury. You haven't established the fact that he's smart enough to hurt you. You haven't established 86 for knowledge. When we were over in Hawaiian Islands, and I walked in there, and we called upon the Maui Water Department for interfering with the Hawaiian People's Treaty of 1920 for the Hawaiian Homes Land Act, that they will have free water for life. The corporate council wouldn't see me until the attorney got there, and the mayor wouldn't join in either. They knew who I was. They knew I was in the islands. I'd done a couple of radio TV shows on TV. They knew what I was about. The government. And so they came walking in there, and the attorney's first remark was, are you innocent? He's going, nice, well, I can't talk to you. I said, well, you've broken the law here. He says, well, you want to file a Title 42 USC 1983 injury on me? I said, you go ahead. And I said, 83? I said, I don't do 83s, I do 86s. Guy's face turned blood red. I said, now sit down, and I says, I'll explain the facts of life to you. And he sat down, and the water department supervisor and assistant supervisor and the mayor, they all sat down there. I says, you see this blackboard in front of us here? I says, that's a Title 42 procedure for knowledge and negligence. And he started reading it, and his face got red, and all of their faces got red. They all went into shock.
He understood it?
Oh, absolutely, he understood it. And he sat there for a good half hour, and he listened to me go through a procedure. I didn't say anything about treason because I didn't hit him with the treason at that time. I just gave him perjury of oath, of their oath of office. And they were very intense about listening. But when we were done, when I came in that room, I shook hands. His hand was very warm. When I went out, you can make iced tea over that hand. And he also asked, he said, would you please leave that on the blackboard and not erase it? And he says, I'd like to study that. I said, well, that's what I put it up there for. And that's, you guys got a blueprint to how you're going to be functioning shortly. We then walked down five flanks of stairs because we didn't want to get stuck in an elevator. And went directly to the airport. Our plane was to leave at 3:35. We jumped the 3:05 flight instead. 5 minutes into the air, it was announced that the Maui airport was shut down looking for two men. That was my bodyguard and I. They didn't open the airport up again until 7:30 that night. They checked every single ID in that airport, all those people. And that's rush hour traffic going back and forth between the islands.
Oh, my goodness. They had no cause of action against you.
Yeah, he did. They didn't want me walking around spreading the word on 42s. They wanted to make sure I don't get off the island.
Differentiate between, like you say, the perjury
and
the treason. Now,
they go hand in hand.
Also, in here, you have the foreign power jurisdiction, and you have constructive treason in your work before this. You had a writ of error, and it was a complaint. Is this still the same?
Everything, right. Now, the writ of error, what we've done is, on the paperwork, the old paperwork, we are removing the old flag statement because it restricted us to admiralty and maritime jurisdiction. Okay. We are calling it a foreign power. or a foreign state, because it isn't identified. The minute we restrict ourselves to a title, we ourselves tie our own hands.
We have a 22 on strictly drafted one on the material before this, and I see that you've done quite a bit of difference.
Yes.
That's why we saved this, so we could.
What page are you on?
Do it.
No, she's got her own papers.
Well, I am just comparing the material with this.
With that disclaimer statement of responsibility on constructive treason, right? And that is on the caption. We'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, I know this subject is really. Let's see. I'll get to that. All right. You want me to jump to that? Well, I'll tell you what. We'll just keep going through the book, and I'll get to that because we're gonna spend several hours on this, so that everybody fully understands what this means, so that you know how to work with it. Now, the next after we're done with the adjectives, adverbs, and pronouns, the next page. This is an outline that cross-references with the last pages of the book, the charts. The one that's got an A on top of it would be a six, page 6 and 7.
Yeah, A2 is page 6.
Five and 6.
Yeah,
what does it start off reading?
For schools?
For school.
For school and use only. Outlines Title 42, students.
A1?
Yeah. Of course it's out of. You got one that's out of. You want one that's in order? Grab a different book. Probably. Change that A1 to D1 and D2. Okay? Yeah, D, like David. D1 and D2. And then the rest of the book pretty well. We'll drop it in as we go. All right. This is just numbers of procedure, how these numbers fall into a procedure. Later in the book, in the H section and in the complaint sections, you have the definitions explained. These definitions that are written with my type are in least common denominators. They have been already converted. The word person has been changed to citizen and party so that you are clerically correct. The United States Supreme Court has enjoyed all of these cases that are being filed for the last 100 years because no one has ever converted the definitions to the least common denominator. This has been their ace in the hole so that they can blow away 7,000 cases a year and be absolutely correct with it. Because every single case coming to the United States Supreme Court would just simply make the statement, we are bringing this case under Title 42 U.S.C. 1983. Even those people, the very few cases that did get through the cracks under Title 42 U.S.C. 1986, then went to a conspiracy under 85 to get to a Title 42 U.S.C. 1983, never did the conversion into the least common denominator and were also disqualified. Only those cases that had so much pressure on the court system that it was either we hear this case or we're going to have a city burnt down because of rioting. They took the case and they ruled upon it. They had to stay busy anyways. That showed that they're doing something up there. But no one, from all the cases I've looked at, even those cases that were decided, were properly written. They were defective cases on their face. And this technology has rewritten how the United States practices law today. Otherwise, any case written that doesn't conform to this here can be prosecuted for the fraud. And only the people that really study this material and come to the seminars are up to speed on this thing. You people, when you leave here today, will have enough speed to go toe-to-toe with the Supreme Court Justice and probably win right out of this meeting. And if you do a little more studying, you get good at it, so there will be no stopping you on any subject matter at all. So it's very important to know what goes on here. So D1 and 2 are cross are outlined by which cross references with a chart in the back of the book. It helps you understand it easier. Now the next page, which would be E1, page 8. I think we're catching up with everybody now. This is the order to show cause form for state and federal. This is a one-page document. The only thing this does is it says what time and place to appear in court.
Okay, you do not have the slide up here. You just have it mentioned one time in here at the top.
Right.
Oh, no,
no. I didn't put any flags when I ran this off. That's all. You always put the flag on all your paperwork. Now,
the
eighth one from the beginning. The eighth page from the beginning. Or seven? Seven? Hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get one of your books. Because obviously my book doesn't correspond to one of your books.
You want to take mine as well? Here.
Huh? What's that? Oh, he's got a couple of them back here. Hey, remember what I told you? No, no. I got it. This one's already number two. Yeah, this one. Oh, no, this one doesn't have any numbers on it. It's all screwed up.
Let's take this one here. It's got numbers on it. That's all
right.
I'll just remember that one. What happened to
B? B. Oh. Who's ever got book four with the number? I don't think anybody in this room's got their four on top of their book, do you?
No.
That one's missing the default judgment. It's a three-page default judgment. I got to put that one in yet. Yeah, I know. But the book that's got a four written on top doesn't have a default judgment in it. Okay, who's got the screen clips?
David, we went from A, then we went to C1. What happened to B?
No. B was, your book was different than mine.
Default judgment here, I got it on page 38, David.
Yeah, I know. I say there's only one book. It has a number on it. It's written, number four does not have it in. I made an inventory of everything that was put out today. So I might as well just... Okay.
We're working on order to show cause for state and federal.
B. Okay, we're on order to show cause next. Yeah. Well, my book's the same as this one. I just got numbers on mine, that's all. I'll just work with the headings on top. Because you got your numbering on there and... I'll just put. Have you got a clip factor for this one? Okay, the. This is going to be filed in either state or.